Good afternoon, everyone. This is Michael Gibbons in Carson City. I'm joined by Judge Jerry Tao in Las Vegas, Judge Bonnie Bulla in Las Vegas. We're conducting our oral arguments today by video on Blue Jeans. This is the last argument of the day. So far, it's worked for all the previous ones. Hopefully, we'll continue on with that good luck. I can see on the screen to my left, Ms. Shanks, representing Mr. Lopez, and to my right, Ms. Hall, representing Dr. Candela. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. Judge Tao, can you check and make sure everything's working fine from Las Vegas?
Can you guys hear us?
Good afternoon. Can you hear us okay?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, very well.
Thank you.
Okay. I just want to, before we begin, thank you for taking this case pro bono. As you know, we have more people who need lawyers than there are lawyers willing to step up, and we always enjoy when people do. It's better for the parties. It's better for us. We get better argument, better briefing, and even though I know it's a huge sacrifice of time on your part, we really do appreciate it.
Thank you for taking the case pro bono, and we're happy that you're here with us today. Judge Tao and I are wearing our masks because we're in Las Vegas together. So if you cannot understand what we are saying or you have any difficulties, just let us know, and we'll be happy to restate a question.
Okay. All right. So officially, this is case 79590-COA. Tony Lopez versus Joseph Candela, M.D. This is the time set for the oral argument after the district court granted a motion to dismiss. Ms. Shanks, you're a pro bono counsel here. Thank you again. And would you like to reserve any of your 15 minutes time for argument for rebuttal time?
Yes, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes.
Okay. All right. 3 minutes. Okay, you're coming through very clearly. You may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Therese Shanks. I am here today on behalf of my client, Tony Lopez. Mr. Lopez is a man who was seen by Dr. Candela to perform a revision surgery. Following the surgery, Mr. Lopez experienced significant pain, both mental and physical, resulting from physical inflictions that he believes were caused by Dr. Candela's treatment of him. Mr. Lopez filed a complaint in the district court alleging, among other things, that Dr. Candela, who gave him an operative care form, which included a statement that Dr. Candela would insert a catheter, did not in fact insert a catheter, and when Mr. Lopez woke up as a result of the surgery, which was to the region where the catheter would be inserted or around it, he was in intense pain. The incision was wet because Mr. Lopez had urinated upon it. As a result, Mr. Lopez subsequently suffered an infection. He had difficulty being seen by Dr. Candela. He felt largely abandoned by his physician. He filed a complaint in the district court outlining his frustrations and what he believed to be his harm. He was a self-represented litigant. Dr. Candela moved to dismiss on the basis that this is a medical malpractice action, and Dr. Candela alleged that because the claims sounded in medical malpractice, they needed to be dismissed because Mr. Lopez did not include a medical expert affidavit pursuant to NRS 41A.071. The district court agreed, and it dismissed Mr. Lopez's case. This appeal follows. In this appeal, I am not going to argue on behalf of Mr. Lopez that any claim sounding in medical malpractice should be saved because Mr. Lopez admittedly did not attach a medical expert affidavit. However, I do not believe that his complaint should have been dismissed in its entirety and treated as completely void ab initio because Mr. Lopez's allegations do arise in negligence, and this court and the Nevada Supreme Court have a history of precedent interpreting NRS Chapter 41A, which allows claims that do not require expert testimony to survive without a medical expert affidavit. These are claims that arise in ordinary negligence. One of the most recent claim cases that was briefed by the parties is the Zimborski case. In Zimborski, the Nevada Supreme Court noted that not all claims brought, particularly those brought by pro se litigants, invoke medical malpractice, and that claims for ordinary negligence can arise from medical treatment. These are claims that do not require a juror to rely upon medical expertise to determine whether the judgment, diagnosis, and treatment fell within the applicable standards of care. In Zimborski, the Nevada Supreme Court dealt with a non-medical negligence issue, the failure of a medical hospital, mental health facility, to follow its discharge instructions upon discharging a patient. Zimborski court concluded that this does not require an expert affidavit because a jury can read the mental health records, discharge instructions, and can decide for themselves whether or not the Mental Health Institute followed their own directions.
So which allegations are you saying, because you have, you know, sort of a bunch of facts in here, but which ones are you saying are just ordinary negligence as opposed to the ones that are admittedly medical malpractice?
Mr. Lopez alleged in his complaint that he was given a form that specifically stated a catheter would be used and that a catheter was not in fact used. That is one of the allegations that Mr. Lopez is arguing is ordinary negligence. A jury does not need a medical expert to come in and testify whether catheters are used, how they should be used, when they should be taken out, because Mr. Lopez isn't alleging under the facts of this case that I think he should have used a catheter and he didn't. Mr. Lopez is alleging Dr. Candela specifically said he would because I needed one. It's right here in this form he gave me, and then he didn't do it.
Ms. Shanks,
but what if, I mean, what if the doctor's defense, you know, and again, I don't know what his defense is going to be, but this is, you know, it's at least a plausible defense. Oh, during the surgery, something unexpected happened, so I had to exercise emergency judgment, and my judgment was not to insert the catheter. If that's even a plausible defense for him, then aren't we then back in the realm of medical malpractice?
You know, I thought about what could, Your Honor, be the doctor's defenses, and that is definitely one of the plausible ones. The problem is that this case never proceeded to a point where the doctor could have asserted that. So as plausible as it is that there was a catheter used and it was removed for medically permissible reasons, it's also equally plausible that one just wasn't put in. And at this stage, those facts just weren't known on the motion to dismiss. And on a motion to dismiss, when the court has to construe factual allegations in favor of the plaintiff, Mr. Lopez was entitled to get to that point. He's entitled to know, okay, is this really a medical malpractice case, or can I proceed on ordinary negligence? Because
Ms. Shanks, though, it's a common sense argument that Mr. Lopez made, and you're extending it now. And, you know, you're doing a good job with it. But the question is, how do we know this form is authoritative? You could have one doctor that says, I do it this way, and another doctor does it a different way, and they both could be right. I mean, we don't know. I mean, it's not like this is some medical treatise that says you have to use or you don't have to use a catheter. And we don't know. So don't you have to have a doctor state right at the beginning that a catheter is required in this situation?
Not necessarily. It goes back to Zimborski and the more recent case of State of Curtis, which deals with what happens when you have an error in an actual medical setting where a nurse administered the wrong medication. In this case, the form says, I'm going to do this, and I didn't. And Mr. Lopez is saying, as a direct result of you not doing what you said you were going to do, I have been harmed. Now, he'll have to go forward and prove causation and damage, but the argument is not that a catheter should be used in all of these surgeries because that is standard procedure. Mr. Lopez's argument is more fine-tuned, and it is a catheter should have been used because you said you were going to, I expected you to, and you did not. And
so that's a breach of duty that the jury can determine? Just because the form says that?
I believe that the jury can determine whether or not it is a breach of duty by simply asking, did the doctor follow the instructions that he gave to Mr. Lopez that he represented for how the surgery would proceed? You know, in Zimborski, they have discharge instructions, which they gave to the patient and said, this is our discharge protocol. and they did not follow that discharge protocol. And the Nevada Supreme Court said, when you have an instruction or a procedure that you give to someone and they rely upon it and you don't follow it, then the jury may be able to decide that that was negligent.
I have a different question for you. Mr. Lopez didn't make these arguments below. So what is the standard of review on appeal? Is this error or a plain error case?
Motions to dismiss are reviewed de novo on appeal. They have a very stringent standard of review where this court would look at it with fresh eyes.
Ms. Shanks, I have a question for you. Even in just regular type negligence cases, you still have causation and damages. And that would still need to be proven by the way of medical expert testimony in this case, because whatever Mr. Lopez says might be the outcome of not placing a catheter, whether or not it actually caused medical injury would require medical testimony, correct?
Not for the damages that he's alleged on the face of his complaint. He had noted that he had other medical expenses arising from the placement of the catheter and subsequent and an infection that came. Now, again, I'm not disagreeing with this court that there may be duty questions and there may be damages questions, but that's not what the case was dismissed upon. And those are questions for a later stage in litigation beyond the motion to dismiss stage. If Mr. Lopez has substantive defects in his claims that aren't on the face of the complaint, that will be resolved later. But the issue before this court is whether the district court at the motion to dismiss stage properly dismissed Mr. Lopez's complaint under NRS 41A.071 because there are no facts alleged, if true, that could assert a claim for negligence. And I believe that Mr. Lopez could have asserted and did assert a claim for negligence that does not require a medical expert affidavit.
So, Ms. Shanks, you've talked about the first part, the actual procedure with the form. He also has a claim for the aftercare, which he claims the doctor didn't give him proper care, and you use the word abandon him. So how do we determine that a medical expert was not needed for this? For example, he met with a nurse. I mean, is it required that he meet with a doctor? I mean, isn't this something we need more information from an expert to say whether there's any breach of duty with the aftercare?
Again, Mr. Lopez has several allegations in it, and he is alleging that he couldn't get a hold of the doctor or the doctor's office. He did meet with a nurse initially, but then he was unable to get a prescription approved. He was unable, the office didn't follow through on things that I do not believe a medical expert would be necessary for a jury to understand that this is generally not okay. If you write me a prescription or tell me I have a prescription, but then you don't actually tell the pharmacy that I have that prescription, if you don't transmit it and I need it and I can't get it, I don't think that you would need a medical expert to determine whether or not that was malpractice.
Well,
I think that a jury.
If the nurse prepares this prescription and the doctor doesn't sign it, don't we need to have a testimony from a professional saying whether this was a proper prescription, both the amount and the type and the duration of drugs? And don't we need to know something about Mr. Lopez's medical history to see if it was correct for him? And so a jury might be able to sort of do it generally, but they don't have all the information, and so that's the point of the affidavit. Say the doctor breached a duty of care. He didn't meet the standard of care because he didn't sign the prescription. Versus there has to be medical judgment exercised to determine if this is a proper prescription, particularly if it's for pain pills. Those are drugs of abuse, so it needs to be looked at by someone, doesn't it?
Right, but again, in Zimborski, as the Nevada Supreme Court pointed out, sometimes pro se litigants mix medical, non-medical negligence and non-malpractice allegations together. And the question for the district court is not, you know, whether it should be thrown out entirely, but whether there is something that could have survived that is in mere negligence that a jury could consider without a medical expert affidavit. I see that my time is up, and I would like to reserve my remaining time barring any further questions from this court.
All right, you have 3 minutes reserved. Thank you. All right, well, we'll switch to the respondent. and that's Ms. Hall.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Heather Hall, and I am here representing respondent Dr. Candela. And if I could, I'd like to start with something that I agree with appellant's counsel on, and that's the Szymborski decision. And in that decision, the court did carve out that there are circumstances where medical issues can potentially give rise to ordinary negligence claims instead of professional negligence. But the distinction that was made by the Supreme Court in that case is that it's when a medical provider is performing non-medical functions. And here, Mr. Lopez has not alleged any non-medical functions being performed by Dr. Candela.
So let me ask you this, Ms. Hall. This is almost kind of like it's almost a res ipsa argument. There are some things, the essence of res ipsa, and the reason you don't need an affidavit is there are just some things that even if we as laymen don't know all the medical intricacies, we know that they're wrong, leaving a sponge in a body. I don't know how to perform heart surgery, but I know if you left a sponge in somebody's body cavity, that's wrong. If somebody amputates the wrong leg or removes the wrong kidney, I don't need to know how to remove a kidney, but I know that's wrong. And so the argument here that I think is being made is, look, I don't know how to do this specific kind of surgery, but we know that people have to pee periodically. And if you put somebody under anesthesia for some long period of time, even a layman knows he's going to pee at some point. So what are you going to do about that? And by not doing anything about that, isn't that the kind of thing that a layman knows is going to go wrong? What's your response to that?
Thank you, Your Honor. I would agree with you that there are circumstances that are set forth in 41A-100 that are very clearly delineated when there is not an affidavit required because it's res ipsa. I don't believe the allegations here amount to anything that could be considered res ipsa. What Dr. Candela did or did not do during the surgery he performed on September the 12th is not within the common knowledge of a layperson, whether those actions, that medical decision-making, complied with the standard of care. The surgical procedure disclosure in this case is not a facility policy and procedure. It describes the anticipated actions that will be taken during surgery. But certainly a medical provider is permitted by the standard of care to exercise reasonable medical judgment. And that's not something that would be within the common knowledge of a lay juror. An example of what would be in that Estate of Curtis case, there were various claims that were found to be, that could not survive without an expert affidavit, primarily the negligent supervision claim and the allegation that the facility failed to monitor. What the court found could survive was the allegation that the nurse gave medication to the wrong patient. Because as the court explained, that doesn't involve any medical decision making and could arguably be within the common knowledge of a layperson. That is very different than the allegations here. What was done during the surgery, what was not done during the surgery, what appropriate follow-up post-operative care was required, those are not issues that a layperson could understand without medical expert testimony. So what the district court did here is the court properly looked to the substance of the allegations and determined that what was alleged involved medical treatment and judgment and required an affidavit. And that was the basis for the dismissal under 41A-071. And certainly in the order that was filed, there is an analysis of that and that these two issues, the surgery and the post-operative care and whether it was compliant with the standard of care, those issues arise out of medical decision-making. And on that basis, I'd ask the court to affirm the district court's dismissal. It's based on...
So I gather part of Ms. Shank's argument is because the doctor told the patient what the doctor was going to do in this sheet of paper. I mean, this is not exactly the argument she's making, so maybe I'm extrapolating from her actual argument just a little bit, but just to throw this out to hear your response. It seems like she's kind of saying, look, the jury doesn't need to know what an expert thinks of it, because the standard of care is right here on this piece of paper. I told you what the standard of care is, so why can't you just hold the doctor to that standard of care that the doctor himself set forth? I gather that's sort of what the argument she's making is that we don't need to know what an expert thinks because the doctor himself said, this is what I'm going to do.
Well, Your Honor, to that point, this was a surgical procedure disclosure statement consent form. I don't agree that the consent form sets the standard of care. It is designed to advise the patient of foreseeable events during surgery and potential complications and risks. If a medical provider makes the decision to take a different course intraoperatively, that does not necessarily mean that there was a violation of the standard of care. And again, you know, I think that a jury would need medical expert testimony to understand those issues and whether using a catheter in surgery, not using a catheter in surgery, whether Dr. Candela was required to place an indwelling catheter for his postoperative course. All of those are issues, Your Honor, that I think no layperson could understand without a medical expert to explain that what was required by the standard of care and how Dr. Candela's medical actions and judgment allegedly deviated from that.
Ms. Hall, was there a separate informed consent claim in this case?
Your Honor, there was not. The way that the complaint is styled, there are, I believe, about a dozen alleging paragraphs, and there's not really a clearly delineated claim of any sort in terms of title. But there is no claim in the allegations that he was not appropriately consented or informed of the procedure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Hall, what about the aftercare? You've talked about on the main care that the form itself was just to provide informed consent, but the aftercare, there is no form. So the argument is that a jury could understand just applying normal common sense that if a doctor, if you're having problems after your surgery, then the doctor should see you.
Well, and to that point, and I believe this was raised a little earlier in the argument, that Mr. Lopez acknowledges in his allegations set forth in the complaint that he was seen by a nurse at Dr. Candela's office for postoperative care. Whether or not the standard of care permits postoperative care and wound care to be provided by a nurse, or whether the standard of care requires the patient be seen by a physician, those are not issues that a layperson without input from a medical expert would be able to consider. So certainly the postoperative care, that's inextricably linked to the medical care, and it is not an allegation. The allegation that Dr. Candela failed to provide competent postoperative care, that's not an allegation that could be presented absent medical expert testimony.
Okay. All right, any other questions?
Not at this time, right. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Ms. Hall. We'll go back to the appellant, Mr. Lopez, through Ms. Shanks. And Ms. Shanks, I'm sure you heard Ms. Hall reference the estate of Curtis case, and that just came out in July, so the briefing was already done in this case when that was released. Are you familiar with that case?
Yes, Your Honor. I filed a notice of supplemental authority regarding the estate
That's
of
right.
Curtis.
Sorry.
And the estate of Curtis is interesting because it goes to just Justice Tao's earlier point of res ipsa loquitur. That case began as a res ipsa loquitur case, and upon appeal, the Nevada Supreme Court said you don't need res ipsa loquitur here because this is the common knowledge exception, which is very similar to res ipsa loquitur. That belief that a jury can look at a case that appears to involve medical decision making and say this just isn't right, and we don't need an expert to tell us that this isn't right. And again, in the state of Curtis is a really good example of how non-medical or medical expert medical decision-making can sometimes not require expert decisions. You know, whether to give a patient a drug and in what dose is a medical decision, but who you give it to is not necessarily it. And the nurse gave it to the wrong person. And that was clear from the instructions that this was not the patient to whom that was intended. And I would just like to close my argument by pointing out that the question of whether or not this involves medical decision making is a question that has to be construed in favor of Mr. Lopez at this early stage of the pleadings under Nevada's motion to dismiss standard. I believe that it is equally true that while I can certainly understand this court's hesitation that there are going to be or possibly are issues involved in this litigation that would require medical decision making, I also believe that the complaint that Mr. Lopez drafted can be construed to encompass claims that would not. And under the standard of review that the district court must employ, which is to have all reasonable inferences in Mr. Lopez's favor, I do not believe that dismissal of the entire complaint was appropriate. Thank you.
All right. All right. Any final questions?
No, other than thanks again for taking this case pro bono, and we really appreciate the effort. And I mean, you know, without your assistance and your supplemental briefing, this case, you know, wouldn't have even merited oral argument. But having the additional briefing helped, and we really appreciate it.
Excellent job. Thank you both so much. It was very helpful.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Shanks, again for taking this on a pro bono case and your dedication to doing a good job here for Mr. Lopez, and Ms. Hall for your good representation too. So this matter will now stand submitted, and the court will issue a written decision in the near future.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We'll be in recess.